Blog Talk Radio.
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
Until the midterm elections, the race for Georgia's governorship is a toss-up. With us now from Atlanta, the Democrat in that race, Stacey Abrams, she's deadlocked with the Republican nominee, two-term Georgia Secretary of State, Brian Kemp. And thanks so much for being with us, Stacey. I want to start with a story that the Associated Press broke yesterday and ask you what you can tell us about it. The AP said that your opponent, who again is Secretary of State in charge of registration and voting, said that suggesting that he's using his position to suppress voters. Up to 55,000 people who have registered to vote, and 70% of those are black voters, and they may not even know that he's trying to suppress their voter registration. What can you tell us about that, and what can be done to count every vote?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me this morning. The challenge is this process called exact match, and we've been fighting him on this since 2014. What happens is if you have a hyphen in your last name, if you have a difficult spelling, if anyone misspells or leaves out anything, they can use that as a reason to not process your registration. And that means that about 53,000 Georgians currently have their registrations in pending status. Technically, they can cast provisional ballots, but provisional ballots are often not processed. And so we're deeply worried that 53,000 people, 70% of whom are African American, will be disenfranchised in this election.
And you also say that of those people, again, let's state it again, 7 in 10 of the voters are black voters in Georgia.
Exactly.
Some of them, many of them, may not even know, according to the Associated Press, that their registration has been held up.
Part of the problem with exact match is that you don't know what the problem is. So if you resubmit the exact same information, but the registrar drops the hyphen or transposes a letter in your name, you don't know that that's the reason that you weren't processed. Number one, you may not get the information. Number two, if you return the same information you submitted the first time, the same mistake can happen. But what we want people to understand is we're fighting this. There are organizations across the state that are fighting this, but we still can get our votes out. We need people to understand that we've got 1.5 million eligible voters who are on the rolls, who do not vote in midterms, and if they will stand up and speak to those 53.
RDB, the women's station, the new look and feel of radio.
Good evening, everyone. I hope everyone is having a marvelous night. This is Black Coffee checking in with you. And who else do we have that is on the line?
You got Mario Coleman.
Noel Robinson.
Sandy Pruitt.
Hey, Sandy.
Hi, how are you tonight?
All right. We had such a good time last week. We decided to do it again.
Yeah, we decided to do it again. I'm going to try to hang in here with y'all tonight the best I can. This blue's trying to take over with me tonight.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yep, so y'all, if I start coughing, just be patient with me.
Sandy, we're in the same boat because I've got sinus drainage, so I apologize in advance myself for coughing. This is Noel.
Okay,
and this
Noel.
Is Mario. I got a cold as well.
So we got a sick show going tonight, huh?
This is the night. It should be really sick.
Yeah, right there.
See, none of you were raised by my grandmother, so I got the home remedies. I'm good.
Okay.
So you're the only one who got no cold.
I'm good.
Well, I'm going to laugh as long as I can. Go ahead.
Okay. The topic tonight is the spirit of Jim Crow is still alive. And it's directed at the fear and intimidation that is trying to be leveled against especially people of color in the electoral process. Taking a look at what we have been seeing in the news recently, I'd like to call on Mr. Noel Robinson to give us his take on that topic and where he stands with regard to that.
Well, if I understand the question properly, there is definitely intimidation with regards to the primarily the African-American vote. And unfortunately to me, it starts with 45. I will not even call the name, but it starts there, trying to intimidate and constantly coming up with reasons why why we're a problem. Whenever 45 makes the comment, which I find to be so hateful and racist, when he says, "Look at my black," okay, my blacks. He doesn't even have the decency to call us African Americans. It's "Look at my blacks." That is an intimidating factor in itself. it's so degrading. And then we have a dominant Congress of one party who is overwhelmingly, it appears, intimidated by even challenging this knucklehead. And I find that to be racist within itself. As primarily Democrats, and not all black people are Democrats, I understand that. But those that are of the Republican persuasion, I haven't heard one black Republican that's in any kind of power that will even challenge this fool. And I find that to be, I'm trying to choose my words properly because I don't want to swear, because that's what I feel like when it comes to 45. I don't want to reduce myself to that level as our former president and our former first lady said, when they go low, we go high. And I want to go high, but this person in this Congress is so very, very low. It is almost ridiculous. I wonder, what do you think, just as a thing that would make you go, what would have happened if the former president had said, there goes my, where are my whites at?
That would have been a problem. It would have been a major problem. It would have made it a major problem.
Because then he would have been a racist and he would have been blah, blah, blah. And, of course, grounds for impeachment. He should have been run out of office if he said, where are my whites? But 45 can say, look at my blacks. The black people love me. But what if he had said, the white people love me? Give me a break. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But I'm going to step out the way and let somebody else comment because I could go on for a while, obviously. Right? There you go.
Well, that's what we're here for. Mario, I want to hear from you. I know you have some very, very sage points that we have talked about before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to refrain, too, from using profanity. But from it's literally like the Republican Party is kind of like sold their soul to the devil. You know what I mean? because, like, when you saw, like, I've been following this whole thing, like the Kavanaugh hearings or whatever. Oh, man, they were just up in arms. How could you do this to this man? Blah, 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 banging on the desk. I'm like, well, where was all this anger when, you know, our kids were getting shot in school? Where was all this anger when your constituents were getting shot in Vegas? You know, where was this anger when these kids were getting ripped apart from their families? So they just pick and choose, and they always holler, the American people know better, when it's not even about the American people. All it's about is really, you know, getting in position to get as much money as they possibly can and hold on to their jobs and just do what they need to do in order to keep their pockets filled. This doesn't have anything to do with integrity, honor, anything that's involved with having some type of decency about the office that you hold and serving the people. You know, all of that's pretty much out the window now. And you can see it also, his rhetoric. What I notice is that when he talks about the NFL, like the players must stand and they must show respect, it reminded me of kind of like when I seen Birth of a Nation. Remember when he had the guy going around, Nat Turner going around to these different plantations and kind of preaching to the to the other slaves to keep them docile and everything like that. And just the bait and switch that he does, because he knows that those players aren't standing against a flag. They're standing against police brutality. You know, they've made their point known totally, but he does a lot of switch and bait, you know what I mean? But the thing is, at the end of the day, you can't be a liar unless you got people who want to believe in your lies. You know what I mean? You can make up these crazy, you know, like these people know. They didn't hear them say, yo, this is about police brutality. But he said it's about the flag, and they want to believe that, man. They want to be, you know what I mean? You can't spread hatred unless you have those that are willing to participate in hatred. You know, Trump only has as much power as people give him.
Can I interject something here? A phrase just comes to mind right quick, and that is a phrase I've heard many times. He who stands for nothing will fall for anything. And that so
Absolutely.
Much is what I hear from this clown, as I say. Let me inject something here. There's a retiring senator from Arizona, what's his name? I want to say Freeze, that's not it. But during the Kavanaugh hearing, he's the one that said, you know, we need to extend this and we need to dig a little deeper and let the FBI take a look at things before we vote. But he also said in an interview, if you were running for re-election, would you have done this? And
no.
His answer is
no.
No. He said
yeah.
no. Well, why
I remember
not?
That.
Because there was no political gain if I had done it, if I was running for re-election. So in other words, because I ain't running, I can do this now. But if
mm-hmm.
I'm running, none, all they want to do is stay in power. I believe we talk about removing or changing Congress. I just assume we get rid of every one of these asses, quite frankly. But the problem
right.
is we as in communities will say we need to get rid of all of them but leave mine alone. Okay, because here in Georgia, here in Atlanta, a member of Congress is a well-known civil rights icon. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
John Lewis. Well, get rid of everybody in Congress, but don't get rid of John Lewis. Why not? I'm not against John Lewis, but I don't know what has John Lewis done lately. I don't know.
Right.
My point is that if you go to Kentucky, get rid of everybody in Congress, but don't get rid of Mitch McConnell, because he's my senator. Do I make a point? You understand what I'm saying? We need to get rid
yeah.
of everybody except mine. But if we keep all of yours, we ain't getting rid of nobody.
Right.
You know, the question was about Jim Crow. In 1896, Louisiana had 130,000 plus registered black voters. 8 years later, only 1,300 of those could pass the state rules for voting.
Uh-huh.
And this was in 1896.
Wow.
And that's when Louisiana and Mississippi had passed the laws making limited voting rights to those who could only own property or who could read or whose grandfathers had been able to vote, who paid
right.
poll taxes. Come to 2018, in the state of Georgia, Secretary of State Brian Kemp, and you
mm-hmm.
tell me the same thing that happened in 1896 with that 130,000 plus registered black voters is not the same thing that's happening in 2018 with the 100,000 plus ballot registered voters that's been purged, or the 50,000 plus write-in votes, mail-in votes, or whatever they are that's been purged, that's not matching. You know, what until we begin to understand that this is nothing new, these are no new tactics, and that's what should be working in our advantage. Because if you're coming at me with something that you've already come at me with before,
mm-hmm.
and when you brought it to me the first time, I was able to deal with it, put it aside, and move past it, and get what I needed to get. Why do you think you can bring that back to me and intimidate me and make me think that I'm going to sit back, sit down, and turn my head and allow you to do it, and it's okay? You know, it's not okay. It wasn't okay in 1896, and it's not okay now. And until we understand that this is not no new shit they throwing at us, this is not new, you know. And then we have to go back and think about some of the ways that our grandparents and great-grandparents handled this. Then maybe let's go back. Sometimes it's not always about a new way of thinking. Sometimes you got to say, well, hey, we took care of this then, because these are the same people, and they are no smarter now than they were then. But we, on the other hand, are much smarter now than we were
then.
And we are much less intimidated as well.
I ain't intimidated at all.
You know, my thing was, I said this morning when we were talking and having kind of a meeting regarding this topic. One of the things I said is just like we carry the spirit of our ancestors within us, they carry the same spirit of theirs in them.
True.
And true. And so we're still fighting that battle. And we have to remember that. We have to remember that and fight that battle with all our might. And we have, for me, frankly, one of the things that I have seen is so many people that were once complacent, people of color that were once complacent in this, thinking that Jim Crow was dead and that we had made it over. These people have awakened now. And they're like, wait a minute, I see so many people who would not have been involved in the political process be awakened because of, as you call them, 45, I call them something else, but there may be some Christians listening who don't want to hear that word. But 45, you know, 45, there was another saying that all he did was cut the grass so we could see where the snakes are.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I mean, nothing, it's like this, all of this thing, everything that's happening right now has been prevalent all along, you know. And as a matter of fact, they said statistically, when Obama got elected and for his two terms, they used that to actually recruit white nationalists, white supremacists and everything, because I know personally that there were people, there were white people that couldn't even sleep at night because we had a black president. You know what I mean? So that was actually the fire that ignited their bigotry, their racism. So when Trump showed up and just basically, you know, the cold word is, well, he keeps it real. The cold word, but what that means is he's saying exactly what we're thinking. Because ain't nowhere in the world somebody can say some stuff like the stuff that he says and people get on board with it unless they agree with it, you know. But going back to what Sandy was saying, this has been here all along. I mean, I've experienced it through the military and through certain segments of my life. I wasn't surprised, but like you were saying, and that saying, now that we know who the enemy is, we just have to re-strategize how we move.
You know, when you talk about intimidation, I think when I was a kid, and I don't know how you guys were brought up, but it was eight of us, and my mom and dad taught us that we don't go out and we don't mess with anybody. Don't go picking no fights with nobody. You know,
okay.
You don't have to agree with people, but don't pick no fights with anybody. But
if somebody
mess
with
you, or if somebody hits you, then you have every right to hit them back. And you don't have to hit them back the same way they hit you. Because once they hit you, it's open season for you to hit however you need to hit.
Right.
And in addition to that, because there were so many of us, she made sure that my brothers and sisters and each one of us knew that if one of us was in a fight, all of us was in a fight. That's where we need to be right now. Don't think, well, if we get angry, if we hit back, then we're stooping to their level. No, we are not stooping to their level. We would never stoop to their level. You know,
we don't have the power
to
stoop to their level.
And if knocking somebody down in order to bring them up is what has to be done, then we just need to knock it down and not apologize for it.
So how do we fight it now? Other than the vote, okay? Other than the vote. I voted just the other day. And quite frankly, I felt so good about it when I walked out the building. I wanted to turn around and go back and vote again. I'm like, well, damn, that felt real good. Can I vote again? And of course, I couldn't do that. But I wore my sticker all day long, and I was very proud to have it on. Prouder than I was, quite frankly, when I voted for Barack. And I was very much an Obama fan, very much an Obama fan. Was very happy for Obama. But I was also happy with Clinton. You want to know the truth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this particular election, I just felt so very energized and so angry at the same time. And the only way that I knew how to fight was with my vote and trying to promote anyone and everyone to do the same thing. If you don't vote, don't say shit. I'm sorry. If you don't vote, don't say shh. Yeah, let's put it like that. Okay, I won't use the full word. But if you don't vote, if you don't vote, you ain't got the right to say nothing to me. Don't tell me nothing. But don't tell me nothing. Don't be a
because you're actually part of the problem.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you something. I've lived through a lot of presidents. You know, there's been a lot of presidents in my lifetime. Some I liked and some I didn't like. I didn't care for Reagan. You know, I didn't particularly care for Johnson. I didn't care for neither one of the Bushes. You know, I didn't care for them. You know,
okay.
But I could deal with what they were doing because I understood.
Okay.
There's a big difference in what's happening with 45.
I totally agree.
45 has brought something out in people on both sides. You know, he has brought it out, and he has been so divisive in his nature. You know, from November the 2016, when he won that election, there's been a certain tense over my body. And having to go through that every day, day in and day out since 2016, because I wake up every day not knowing what he's going to do next, but knowing it's going to be something. Until it's the place, I'm tired of waking up trying to figure out what he's going to do. I got to do something. So if it means voting, yeah, I'm going to get out here and vote. And if it's going to also mean signing up, because whether you want to admit it or not, when you want to hurt them, you've got to mess with their money. And you have to start thinking about reinvesting in yourself. We've done it before, and we can do it again. And people need to know more about Black Wall Street and Rosewood and just remember that we can do it. They don't even have to go that far. They can stay right here in Atlanta and Auburn Avenue. You know, that's where half the people came from, Black Wall Street, when they burned everybody out there. A lot of them moved here to Auburn Avenue and tried to bring that same thing. You can still do that.
And, you know, even with Black Wall Street, that was a part of that Jim Crow intimidation. And there are certain dog whistles that the white extremists respond to. Things such as, they aren't like us. These are words they're using in political campaigns right now. They're not like us. That's the same rhetoric that was used during Jim Crow.
Exactly.
To insinuate that Black people did not have the same level of intelligence and humanity that white people had. So that was their excuse to do the things that they did. So this Jim Crow politics, that is the age that we're living in once again, and we find ourselves needing our soldiers to come forward. And
do
that
you
means,
think?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was saying, and that for me, that means that we need soldiers on every front. We need those that can intellectually match them whip for whip, like my girl Stacey Abrams.
Okay.
We also need people with microphones like us to come out and say what's really real, not having to be politically correct. And when they come up with this, say this term liberal, I wear it proudly. And the reason I wear it proudly is if you look back at every progress, every step of progress that has been made toward equality in this United States, it was led by liberals. So how can that be? That would only be an insult for those, and a dog whistle for those who were against progress and equality. Okay, I'm down on my soapbox now, y'all. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, we've had that problem. Some of us have had that problem of stagnation, you know, ever since the beginning. I even remember a quote from Harriet Tubman saying that she freed thousands of slaves, but she could have freed even more if they wanted to come. Some of them didn't want to be free. Some of them wanted to, you know, stay within that realm of a controlled situation. I mean, it just became normal for them. So our passivity has to come to an end, and the only way it can come to an end is through action, through several degrees of action, because sitting back and, you know, waiting, that's not going to happen. You know, getting comfortable. I think that, to be honest with you, that this needed to happen because I think that we were kind of getting a little too relaxed. You know what I mean? Like with 44, with Barack winning and everything like that, it kind of, but I was seeing, because actually at the time I was down in the South, because I was down here for Hurricane Katrina. So I was seeing things that were happening in the government, like, you know, when he was trying to give money to certain states, the southern states were actually turning it down. You know, they didn't want money from. So I'm like, you let your state just burn. You know, it's still the government's money. You got a black man in charge, but that's, you know what I mean? Their hatred and disdain for him was so great that they didn't even recognize that it was still coming from the government. He just was a representative. He's still trying to give y'all money, still trying to help y'all out, but it was just that, you know, it was just that intense. So, I mean, you could really see it as he was president, what was taking shape. So, I mean, Donald Trump really just became the icing on the cake, but it all just came out. It all just, like, just boiled to the surface, man. So the writing's on the wall. You know, we just got to really be strategic, I think, in all aspects of the game, our finances, understanding how to just navigate this thing on all levels. We can't be sleeping on no levels no more.
I sincerely hope that this election, this particular election that we are having on the 6th, that what happens is that we end up taking away so much of 45's power. You're not going to take away him out of office, but can we take away a lot of his power? And his power comes from the vote. If there is a Congress that will by all means fight against him, okay, because if the Democrats end up with control of either the House or the Senate or both, then henceforth his power is reduced. Because he's already running scared. He's letting his people know, if these Democrats get elected, they're going to impeach me. Well, why would
he? That's why he's doing a Trump tour.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's doing the tour. And if I don't win, it's your fault because you didn't vote for him. Really?
He's telling them,
come on.
You voted for me. You voted for me.
Yeah.
I mean,
his
ego is just impossible. Whoever I'm
it
here
is.
For, that's one thing. But it's all about me. So go out there.
It's all about me. Absolutely. So you're doing this thing. Why is it that how come one of the most disrespected presidents ever was a black man? That man was so disrespected, it's unbelievable, while he's speaking to a joint session of Congress. Somebody yells out, you lie. Really?
Right.
Nobody has done that with 45.
Mm-mm.
And obviously he lies constantly. Nothing has ever been his fault. But if you take away his power, because he's not
he would not be rubber stamped for Kavanaugh, who we knew was, that's a whole nother issue, okay?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Because he is rubber stamped, Congress did not want to give Obama the infrastructure, the money he wanted to rebuild our infrastructure. When he came
right.
into office, we were in a serious, serious, serious deficit. And less than 4 years later, they were pissed off because they left him with a mess, and they were pissed off because he didn't clean it up fast enough. Really?
Right.
Really? He didn't clean up fast enough? Now what's going on? And, of course,
They're taking credit for
it. Absolutely. They're going to take credit for everything. Absolutely. But we cannot give him more money because what it will do, it will increase our deficit. But because they came in and gave the 1% such a tax break, the deficit has skyrocketed. And to offset it, what they want to do, listen to Mitch McConnell. We want to cut Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah.
We want to cut everything. Social Security.
Mm-hmm. And they want to call them entitlement programs. Really?
That's
right.
It.
But the big lie that they're doing right now is now that they're saying, because, you know, I'm watching the news constantly. Now the Republicans are shifting the dock. They're saying now that they're for entitlement programs just to get the vote. I mean, that's a new talking point for them now.
And they're now for preconditioning.
I don't care if they call it an entitlement program. I am damn entitled to it. That's my money.
I'm entitled
to it just like they entitled to theirs. So you can call it any kind of fancy name you want to try to call it and try to confuse people or try to make me think I should feel bad because I'm asking you to explain. I'm pissed because I got to ask you to give me my money.
That's the same thing I was going to say, Sandy, because when I look at my check, I want to know who the hell FICA is and why she get my money.
Yeah.
Why the hell she get my money? So, yes, I don't understand why
And I'm going to tell you, people been trying to figure out who FICA is for years. You ain't the first one to ask that question.
The government mob. The mob get their cut. Everybody who works, we gotta pay out a cut of our money to the government, which is the mob, pretty much. You know, he's talking about the mob, that's the real mob. We gotta pay state government, we gotta pay the state mob and the federal mob.
Don't forget the county got to get some. Everybody
we paid over the years. Social Security, they made that up. We paid into that. Ain't nobody giving us that back.
We put that money in there.
You know, for years and years and years. I know I did it.
Thank you, Roosevelt.
I don't care if you want to call it an entitlement. Because, yes, I am entitled to it.
I think I'm entitled to it, too.
Exactly.
Thank you, Roosevelt, for Social Security.
Amen. Let me be the moderator for a second and ask that we allow time to cut to a commercial. We do have a few bills to pay.
All right. And allow me to say good night. I am going to cut off. Sandy?
All right.
Talk later.
Good night. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. All right, babe. Bye-bye.
I grew up in a household where voting was just something you did all the time. And my father, who had multiple sclerosis, I remember going to the polling place with him and how much effort it took for him to park his car, to get his crutches, to walk into the church basement in our local neighborhood where he voted, and to stand there holding himself up, making sure he cast his ballot. I remember my father doing this exercise every single election, and not worrying about whether it was raining or snowing or whether he was tired. And I remember accompanying him on these voting excursions to that little church basement. The machines were the older ones where you click them and it would pick the candidate and then you'd have to pull the lever. I would watch my dad vote and think, wow, what a special responsibility that must be, and must be something important for him to take this much time out. and push himself to get to the polling place. So that's one of the reasons why I don't take voting for granted. I vote in every election, because voting in every election is the only way you can have your voice heard. It's not just important to vote for the president, because a lot of stuff happens at the local level. So you have to vote every single election for your mayor, for your governor, for the people who sit on your school boards. All of that affects your daily life. So you gotta vote. You gotta vote often, and you gotta vote every election.
Atlanta, Minneapolis, Nashville, and everywhere else.
Might be some confusion, but my name is Stacey Abrams, and I anticipate the next governor of the great state of Georgia. But we got a little bit of work to do before we get there. You see, I have an opponent in this race who has decided that the numbers aren't looking good for him. And usually when you see something isn't going your way, you go with what you know. And unfortunately, what my opponent knows is how to suppress the vote. He spent the last 10 years, the last decade, fighting against the right to vote. And when he finally got the reins of power in 2010, he took it to a whole new level. This is someone who arrested a woman and charged her with a felony for helping her blind mother cast the ballot. This is a man who in 2016, we took him to court, Francis and I, with some good friends, and we got a federal judge to tell him to stop suppressing the vote. He had illegally canceled 33,000 voters in the state of Georgia. And a federal judge said that is illegal and made him put them back on the roll. But the problem is, he's got power. And so what he did next, no, we don't do that. No, no, no. We vote him out. That's what we do. We vote him out.
We are back. And am I correct that Sandy is still on the line with us?
Yes.
And Mario, you're still there as well?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I wanted to, that while we were listening to that piece from Stacey Abrams, going back to the Jim Crow, it is so reminiscent of things that they used to do, like you were saying, Sandy, the poll tax and the other requirements and being able to, you know, you have to be a landowner. This is, these tactics are so reminiscent of Jim Crow. You have to know that it is from the spirit of Jim Crow. It's still that ghost that's hanging around.
Man, they switched it around now too. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they switched it around now to redistricting. I don't know why I'm having a problem saying that word, but you know how they basically do redistrict, where they move the lines, you know, move the lines around, different things like that. So people that used to be able to vote in this particular county can no longer vote in that particular county because they changed, they moved the lines around a little bit. So that's their other way to suppress the vote. So there's certain little strategies, and they're all doing it. Because they've even, you know, of course, people have been leaking out their meetings or whatever, and they've said that with the energy and the determination that the voters have, that the black voters and Latinos that they have this year, it's going to be a problem for them. I mean, this was actually leaked from one of their meetings. So this is their strategy in order to suppress the problem. They've been using these different tactics. I think there's one where they were saying that they nailed it down to one place where 13,000 people could vote, and then they took that particular location and moved it out of town and didn't tell certain people where it was. So they couldn't even get to it. I mean, just stuff like that, that if we were in power and we were doing, if Obama had did something like that, it would just sort of been, I mean, it would have, you know, they would have impeached them. It would have just been crazy. But these are just tactics that they're doing, and they're just getting away with it. Nothing's being said, nothing, you know, they're not being held accountable or whatever. And I don't even see how they can even win and feel good about themselves knowing how they won. But, you know, that's a whole other thing. You got to have integrity to.
Listen, their ancestors felt good about enslaving an entire race of people.
Absolutely.
Them feeling good, you know, them feeling good about winning a race quicker. And as far as the redistricting is concerned, that is that's the same old trick. It was called, what was it, gerrymandering? Back in the day is what it was called. But it's the same damn thing. The devil ain't got no new tricks for me.
Right.
Ain't got no new tricks. It's the same thing. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. That's why I say we need to, we need to keep in mind that this isn't new stuff. You know, it's the same thing that they've been doing forever and ever. This isn't anything new that they are doing. And so we need to just remember, what did we do before? How did we fight it before? How did we counteract with it before? You know, and...
Mm-hmm.
And we need to remember, and we need to start doing that.
Organize, and just, you know, organizing, and just being determined not to let these situations be greater than our strength to achieve our goals, you know. And they had to go through a lot more. I mean, we ain't got nobody turning water hoses on us or sticking dogs on us and different things like that. I mean, they had to overcome greater obstacles than we have.
No, they're not putting dogs on us. They shooting us down in the street just for having some skitters, or calling the police on us because we cooking out in the park, or because we going to our own house. So no, they're not doing that anymore. They not, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
coming
yeah.
into our homes and shooting us, saying they thought it was their house.
You know, and it's not just black men; it's black people. Period.
Right.
Right.
You know,
I know
it's
just
black
had something
happened.
Okay. They had a gentleman walking. Go ahead.
Good. I was saying that's the reason we have to keep in mind, you know, even though it has been black men other than Sandra Bland in the news, we as black women have to also, you know, our relationships have play a part in this. We have to remember that we need to be vigilant and stand by our men in this. We have to fight right beside them. One of the things that they attempted to destroy in slavery was our sense of family, and there's a reason for it. Because nothing is more powerful than a couple who stands together and fight. So, you know, I'm single, but I'm looking for a man to fight with. So, so until then, I'm going to fight with my brothers. I'm going to stand beside my brothers. And cousins and everybody else, because it's very important that we remember Jim Crow was not just to keep us down. It was to eradicate us. That was the intent, because we were no longer enslaved and they could no longer use us in that. Their intent was to destroy us. And it didn't work then, and it damn sure ain't going to work now.
No. The group is smarter now, man, and a lot more experienced. I don't know. I just, for me, myself, like I said, I see what's happening day to day. You know, like I said, I watch the news, I study, and I'm becoming not bitter, but just more determined to move in the direction I need to move and help others move in the direction they need to move in order to make a difference, but to sustain it. You know, I think that we just got to, there just has to be a new awareness that needs to be ongoing, and a realization that we're fighting against forces, man, that are still trying to eradicate us, to be honest with you. Like she said, it's getting, this is almost blatant now. I mean, I'm a proud gun owner, and I carry mine wherever I go, and I'm trained to do it. I'm trained to utilize it. I'm trained to kill all of that, you know, because of my job or whatever. And I just think that this is the mindset that we have to have moving forward, not to kill, but, I mean, to be able to defend ourselves, to be able to strategize and be able to move through these different scenarios that we've kind of like removed ourselves from, understanding the power of our financing, you know, financial planning and different things like that. We just got to be like on top of our game, because there's so many, the more levels we have to navigate, the more tools we have to be able to maneuver in certain situations. You know, if it's something where it's involving our finances, if we know how to manage our money, if we know how to do this, if we know how to do that, look good on paper, then that's one less thing that they can utilize against us, because we understand how to move within that particular realm of our strategy. You know, it just encompasses all levels of thinking, all levels of action and interaction, and, you know, not being afraid, and we cannot be afraid to share information with each other. You know, so it's like we learn something, we're scared to tell another black person because we think they're gonna come. We got to get past that, man, because we need each other in order to overcome this thing.
I run my mouth too much for that to be thought of as me. but I do understand what you're saying. I truly understand what you're saying. But, again, I have seen some things, as they say, in these streets since 45 has come. And I think it's a process. I think he was a catalyst to get us to a new point of view. Like I said, he has a purpose. Because I don't think, no, I know that there is no destruction for our people in the future. I'm sorry, there isn't. We have suffered through too much and survived. I think what this was a battle cry for us to come together and do even more than has been done in history.
And to really, like I said, create that awareness is a new foundation that needs to be implemented and put in place from now on moving forward. You know, understanding these midterm elections, understanding that your vote counts. And then just understanding, I just think as, you know, because I guess by me working in the criminal system and different things like that, I see the outcome of what happens when brothers just get lost along the way. And, you know, all of that is a part of the Jim Crow, the prison system and different things like that. So just being aware, I mean, little things like just understanding, because I talk to a lot of brothers and they don't really understand the importance of having their credit in line. You know what I mean?
Right.
Looking good on paper. So we just have the financial ability to elevate in different scenarios or whatever. That's a part of our power too. You know what I mean? It's just, what can we do as ourselves independently to strengthen ourselves? Because I look at all of this and just say, yo, I need to get sharper in this. I need to get a much more better understanding of how to navigate this particular scenario. Because another thing I realize is that one thing that we do have at our advantage a lot of times is they're not expecting us to have strategies to overcome. So a lot of times it was a surprise. I mean, like, they were shocked when Obama became president. And I think they were even more shocked when they just seen how a black man could love a black woman and just show total respect and just be, you know what I mean, an absolute gentleman, father figure, and a role model to the world. You know what I mean? Without just compared to what we got now. You know what I mean? And so we have the blueprint, and I just think that we, as black men, I'm just talking, you know, I'm just speaking for myself, we have to elevate ourselves to give our women something to stand with.
Right.
To stand behind or beside. I don't want to even say be behind us. I want to say be beside us. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it starts with us and just maintaining, because we just have to lead by example. You know what I mean? We have to put, you know, for me, it's like, what are we putting into action? You know what I mean? That's my main thing, is really, what are we putting into action right now in order to make us more effective in our objectives to empower us from now on.
And Mario, you brought up the penal system. There is a new weapon that we have to use that was kept kind of hush-hush, and I wonder why.
Mm-hmm.
But many states now are allowing, thanks to President Obama, are allowing felons to get their right to vote back. So,
but they're trying to suppress that.
Yeah, I know. But like I said, we have more power than we realize we have by speaking up and knowing about these things. We can be preemptive in their suppression.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about it is that penal system that is so unjustly against people of color, especially black people.
I can tell you some stories, man.
Yep. I used to work in probation and parole.
Yeah, so you already know.
Yeah. And so to be able to give that dignity back to men and women who have already served their time and paid their quote unquote debt to society.
Mm-hmm.
Where that debt is always greater on somebody of color than it is on somebody not of color. But to be able to gain that back and know that we have it, now is the time to speak up.
Well, they have to create these, you know, like these programs that prepare them to be functional citizens after they leave the system. You know what I mean? That's what's important, too, is giving them the tools. And but the other thing, too, is just making sure that, you know, we got to try to do what we can and not get there, man, because, like, I've talked to brothers who are doing 90, 173, 160 years. I mean, these are young brothers that they ain't even out of their 30s yet, and this is what type of time they're getting, you know, so...
Right.
It's no joke there, and a lot of these cases, you know, that they won't even build these prisons. Yeah, in a lot of cases, if they build a prison in a certain area, they need to guarantee like a 90% occupancy rate. So they build them, they got to fill them. So this is why another reason too, why this is a whole other thing of, like you said, incarcerating them, giving them bigger sentences and different things like that. I know we're kind of getting off subject, but that is another way to suppress. You know, and I work in a women's prison now, and more women are coming in.
Yep.
They just is, I mean, it's crazy, you know what I mean? And just how it's working. So we just got to be, like, you know, more aware and just understand, like, what's going on around us and how, like, the system is just trying to find, it is waiting for us to slip.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, it's a multi-level attack.
Absolutely. From grade school.
It is systematic. It is prevalent. And it's destined for failure. I'm speaking things into existence. It's destined for failure. It's too many of us who are awake now, who are awakening other people. This, you know, is not going to succeed. Sandy, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm sorry.
That's
okay.
You sound
like getting red.
Yeah, that's the reason I was checking in with you. We have about 20 minutes left of the show. But
you talked about you talking about the prison, what's going on with the prison and everything, and that's all, you know. Once again, it's all about them using misdirection to have us thinking it's about one thing when all it is just doing the same thing that they've always done. And I don't care how many different fancy names they try to give it or how many different names they give it, it's still the same thing. You know, when they start locking them up and they said, well, it's for your safety. It was about slavery. It's about having free labor. The same thing. Now, it's still about, and it's everything with them is about money, because slavery and free labor was about money. The prison system now is about money. It's about them being able to put these people in these prisons and make money off of them, first by housing them, and then second by using them as cheap labor. It's all about. You know, and to
you
make
would be
sure that you can keep it stocked, then you're gonna set the ones up that's in there to always be back in there, because it's gonna be so hard for them to do anything on the outside. They don't have an option but to get back in there, and that's the mindset that you want to do, and that's what they're doing. And we got to recognize that and understand it and call it for what it is. And until we keep calling it out. We let 45 sit there and holler fake news, fake news, fake news, until everybody started hollering fake news, fake news, fake news.
The ones that want to believe them, yeah.
Exactly. You know, so we need to stop trying to figure out what he's going to say and say what we need to do and do what we need to do. Because
right.
the one thing
right.
we do know that whatever it is he say, whatever it is he do, it's going to be to the detriment of us.
Yeah.
That's
you know,
one thing we know for sure.
If you take a look and you break it down, one of the reasons why Jim Crow came to mind is because if you look at the similarities, like you mentioned, when Jim Crow was open, you know, was out in the open, they used chain gangs and flooded black the prisons with black men in order to have labor to work on things like their railroads and all this chained together out in fields. All chained them all together to be able to
mm-hmm.
do the work, their work. And they created laws that were destined to target African Americans.
Right.
In order to lock them up to do that. They did the same thing. They are doing the same thing now.
But the only difference is now
laws and
is
all that.
That they're, you know, that instead of using chain gangs, they're using call centers. Because a lot of these call
yeah.
centers, they be calling your house, Verizon, a lot of these major industries, they got female inmates on those phones getting paid. Like normally they might be getting paid $15, $16. They're getting paid like $7 an hour. And I know what I'm talking about because we got one
mm-hmm.
in our prison. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So they got these calls. That's the new chain gang, putting them in there in these call centers from these
right.
major industries. All of them have them. And they're utilizing them for cheap labor.
And they claim what they claim they doing is giving them job skills for when they get out. But they're not giving them job skills for when they get out because they don't want to pay them the $15 an hour.
No.
Right.
You know, so what, I mean, who are you fooling with this job skill thing?
And see, the other
Nobody.
Thing, too, they got the contracts. And the other thing that the people don't understand is that all of them, half of those, about 85% of those inmates are on some type of medication. Now, who do you think is providing medication for the prison?
Pharmaceutical
company. That's another contract. You know what I mean? Their diets are all jacked up. Bunch of starches, this, that, and the other. So if they stay in there, they start getting high blood pressure, this, that, and the other. Now they got to get on medication. So,
right.
you know what I mean? One just ties into the other. And it's all about, like, it's all about contracts and money and keeping everybody in the system so everybody can get paid.
Creating our own economy is going to have to be a part of the plan. Now, we don't have to work on just one thing at a time. You know,
mm-hmm.
we can... you know, do multiple things at once. And that includes being able to promote more businesses, to be able that are black owned and to be able to work together with one another to create our own economy. That's what Black Wall Street was about, and that's why they wanted to destroy it.
Well, we got to understand the importance of being able to work within our finances too. That's almost kind of like a suppression. If we don't understand how to utilize our money in a way that can empower us to get us, you know, like credit to our, you know what I mean, to be able to go out and purchase the things that we need to start a business and different things like that, to get credit in order to do these things, which we can do. We just need to understand the strategies of that. So that's what I'm saying. We have to empower ourselves to get out here and understand the game and understand
yeah.
how to work within the game so we can rise up. And then we can, because everything that I learned about financing and everything like that, I pass on to my nephews when I get a chance to sit down and talk to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we got to move like that too, because that's another way of suppressing. If we all we want to do is get out here, buy expensive cars and sneakers and all that stuff, we just backing up again.
I was in a conversation, you know, when the lottery was so large, and you know, all those conversations about what would you do if you got that kind of money and this, that, and the other. You know, if you were to run across that kind of windfall. And, you know, I'm in a conversation with young women, and they're talking about how they'd have Louboutins and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And my thing to them was, my first thing that I would do is start a foundation so that my people could go to school, open businesses, open schools for one another. You know, that type of thing is what I would be more concerned about. And they looked at me like I had two heads.
Mm-hmm. Our first thing I do is get a financial planner, get somebody to watch him, and make sure that they ain't trying to steal. And because, I mean, you can just live off the interest and then make, like you said, and then put all of those things into play. You know, but just understanding how to let your money work for you. You know what I mean? As opposed to, you know, you working for it. Because, you know, I mean, Jack, it's about understanding how this thing works on all levels. You know what I mean? And understanding that we got a lot of powers that be, you know, working against us that want to see us fail, because they ain't got to worry about us if we way down here. But if we coming up, then we're going to be a problem. But that's their problem. They'll be, you know what I mean? So we got to understand how the system is set up. And like Sandy was saying, they put a lot of different names on it, but at the end of the day, it's Jim Crow suppression in a whole nother way. You know,
exactly.
So we got to understand what's happening, and we got to work through it, man. We got to understand anything that can hold us back is a detriment. So we got to understand how to work through that, how to counter that, and how to rise above that. That's got to be the mission.
You know, it is said that nothing can bring people together quicker than adversity. And I think this current political climate is creating allies of people who never thought they would be allies.
Mm-hmm. No revolution is ever, that's the seeds of revolution, man, is suppression. People get suppressed so much that they no longer, that they're ready to rise up. They don't even care about life or death, meaning that they just ready to do what they need to do. You know what I mean? That's how this country got free. That every revolution that has ever happened through history, the people been so oppressed to the point they unify and they rise up.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the point where we are. We're at a tipping point. We're at a tipping point now, in my opinion. We're at a tipping point where there is information that is flooded. And yes, the news is flooded with negative images with regard to us. But in our own communities, we're seeing people stand up in small ways. Last week I talked about how I work where a polling place is. And when early voting started, it was like I have to struggle to park at my job now. You know, and
wow.
I'm glad. I will take the walk from the other end. You see people where elderly people show up and people, strangers who are there to vote as well, help them into the polling place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm standing back looking at this and looking at how this particular election, after what we've suffered through since January 21st of 2017, after doing that, looking at how it has caused people to say, yeah, you know, we're going to help one another. If you look at the rise in black people that are starting their own businesses and looking for ways to use their talent, all of those things have increased. And I think I've said it before and I will say it again. Sometimes it's not for us to see the finished product, but it's for us to plant the seeds. And I think we've been planting and nurturing seeds that are going to grow, and it's going to come to fruition
right
in the future.
Exactly.
I try to stay off my soapbox. I'm supposed to be a comedian. Black Coffee is a comedian, but she's a comedian with a conscience.
Well, I mean, you know, we got to. I mean, I think the first, no plan can be implemented without strategic input. You know what I mean?
Right.
And methodologies come from strategic planning. So
right.
That's kind of like the foundation of having a strategy of how to elevate, understanding, you know, what the odds are, what's coming at you, and then how to counteract it. And, you know, sometimes it's about it's about being elusive. You know what I mean? It's like you could be against the system, but it doesn't seem like that's what you're doing, but you're getting the necessary information you need to take back and do what you
right.
need to do in order to help everybody else. So you just got to figure out what kind of roles you're going to be playing. But no matter what role you're playing, you got to be effective.
You have to be effective. You have to be able to use what it is you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that is going to create the most benefit for your cause.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what I mean? And we just ain't got to be, like I said, there's just so many different ways. So for me, I'm just about, you know, I'm just about the strategies, man, implementing them, putting them into practice, and leading by example. You know what I mean? Somebody can look at me, well, how'd you do that? I did it this way. You know what I mean? The strategy is already
right.
laid out. So all you got to do is take the blueprint that I created and go ahead and do that. All I ask is that you give it to the next person. You know what I mean? So they can rise.
In 2018, yes, we are still fighting Jim Crow.
We're gonna be fighting it for a long time. I mean, but the thing is we just need to have more victories than defeats. The idea
exactly.
that it's just gonna disappear, we gotta be real about this thing. Racism, Jim Crow, hatred, bigotry, that ain't going nowhere no time soon. You know, but just like everything that I've ever read about when I made the psychological journey to elevate myself, the first thing I had to realize is, you know, what the truth was, how much of a friend I was to myself and how much an enemy I was to myself. And I had to confront the enemy in me in order to defeat that and get that out the way so I could rise. So the first thing we got to do is accept the truth. And it's not being, you know, negative, well, racist. This stuff is here, and it's going to be here. You know what I mean? We just got to learn how to navigate around it by any means necessary. You know, sometimes it might go to somewhere where we might not thought it would go, but we got to be ready for that too.
Exactly.
And we need to stop acting like we're surprised about all this.
That's
not
all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. A surprise is something that you were not expecting whatsoever. This
right.
is not a surprise.
Joy.
We expect it. We expect
mm-hmm.
this for them. So we need to stop pretending like we're surprised by it. Because we're not. The next time somebody, man, I'm surprised they still got Jim Crow. Why are you surprised if Jim Crow is still here? Why are you surprised?
When you
have
the problems at your job, when you didn't have problems with your job with somebody of a different race, we experiencing all this stuff right now at the same time. You know what I mean? There's plenty of people. You got a boss of a different. He might be white or whatever. And you, how come I'm not? You coming to work? You working hard, you doing all this, and you can't get ahead, but one of his buddies can. And you know what I mean? What is that? That's still going on. You can call somebody right now, and they having them problems if it ain't you.
You know what I mean? So let's don't pretend it don't exist, because it's happening right now.
Exactly.
You know? What this is the same old BS that they trying to spray some perfume on. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
they
we just got to, like I said. Mm-hmm. So we just got to learn how to navigate through it. I mean, I know I've encountered it, and sometimes the way I handle it might not always been the best way. Because, you know, sometimes violence isn't the best way to handle something. But sometimes I felt good after I did it.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
But sometimes,
you know,
it can make you feel so good.
Yeah, yeah, I felt good after it. But, you know, I just let them know I'm not the one. So if you're going to come with it, you might as well bring all of it, because we're going to be here for a while. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Look, I tell somebody, I know God said, vengeance is mine. I say, but you know I carry God with me even in my fist.
Man, I'm telling you. So we just got to, I mean, like I said, we just got to understand what it is and how we have to navigate. Because we, either we're going to navigate through it or we're going to get defeated by it. There ain't no gray areas. You know
right.
what I mean? We're going to be at the
and
finish line
is not
and run
enough.
Around in circles. No, it
defeat
ain't.
Is
but
not
we got to make sure. We got to make sure that we're implementing the strategies. We're constantly learning and teaching ourselves, so we'll have those options, so we won't be defeated. You know what I mean? We got to constantly be learning, re-strategizing, readjusting, making adjustments. That's just how it is. You know what I mean? Like you said, you're going to sit back and be like, well, what is this? Because that's what it is. Slap yourself in the face and get back in the game.
Exactly.
You know, this show came about because of the fact that these conversations are going on. So,
right.
That is a positive slant on things. That is a positive slant on things. I'm one of those, the glasses half full people, because I try to look at, I do believe our Creator only puts us through things that are for our betterment. And this is
right.
for our betterment. This is for our betterment. And it, like I said, it's awakening a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and it's bringing all kinds of people to a new and different thought process.
Got to be solution oriented. That's where I'm
exactly.
at. We got to be, what's the solution? You know what I mean? That's what we got to be asking mm-hmm. ourselves. What's the solution? You know? Okay, this is the challenge. How can I conquer it? You know, how can I win? How can I come up? You know, to me, giving up ain't an option. You know what I mean? I'm in this to the last breath.
You know, I was put here for a reason. I am not going to let my talents and my power go to waste while I'm here.
Right.
We're coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And I wanted to ask if both of you would kind of give a wrap-up of what it is that you got from this program and what you hope you put out.
Okay. Ladies first.
Sandy.
Well, what I've gotten is that we still, no matter how far we feel like we've come, it's almost like we are doing this Groundhog Day thing.
Right.
And
yeah.
we'll just keep going. And since we understand that that's what's happening, we need to start preparing ourselves. If we know that this is what's going to keep happening and this is the way it's going, then we need to start accepting that and dealing with it from that plane, from that perspective. And I just hope that everybody can hear the passion that I have in my voice when I talk about what's going on, because it's not just for me. Like you said, the seeds we're planting, I know it's not for me, but I have nieces and nephews and great nieces and mm-hmm. nephews that, hey, I want things to be okay for them too.
Right, right. And Mr. Mario Coleman, what would you like to say?
Well, you know, for me, I just really believe it's and I've just been more determined to lead by example. You know what I mean? Because I'm in a situation where, you know, I kind of face a lot of different challenges on a day-to-day basis. And what I learned, I just want to be able to retain it so I could pass it on to my nephews, my nieces, my daughters, my sons or whatever, because they need these tools in order to face what's, because it's still going to be out here. So, mm-hmm. like I just said, I just want to have the proper information, the proper tools to be able to pass the torch and maybe make their life a little bit easier, because they can navigate through this madness.
Exactly. I think for me, what this program has done for me is given me an outlet to be able to what has been, you know, and I'm a very spiritual person, the things that have been put into my spirit to encourage my brothers and sisters to hold our heads up and to be ready for this fight, because we can win, you know. As a matter of fact, the battle is already won. All we got to do is go through it. So, but we have to come together in order to go through it. And I sincerely hope that that message has been gotten across from this program.
Right. And in that battle, please just make sure you ain't your own enemy before you go into the war. Get you straight first.
Oh, man.
So you can fight
Amen.
That battle.
Amen.
Exactly.
I have certainly enjoyed speaking with both of you tonight, and Mr. Robinson, Noel Robinson, while he was on. And Sandy, I so appreciate you coming on while your voice, you know, while you were sick. That's how much passion you have shown this evening. You got on the radio sick.
Well, I'm glad for this opportunity, and I just hope I'm feeling better soon.
You will be. You will be. I want to say to our listening audience that we have enjoyed bringing this program to you tonight, and we appreciate you tuning in to listen. And we're going to call it a night at this point and say good night. Sandy, you get some rest, take some medicine, and you too, Mario.
I'm getting ready. I was just thinking about
that. Y'all
have a good weekend. You too.
All right.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night, everybody.